Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light, also founder of New Vision Organization, Inc., out of Massachusetts. Every Tuesday, public discussions on anything and everything pertaining to the penal system, prisoners, victims, causes, mental illnesses, addictions, symptoms, effects, outcomes, changes, anything that you want to discuss. We are here every Tuesday for everyone to come on and speak about their issues. This is an opportunity for everyone having something to say who can voice their opinions and provide feedback, brainstorm for ways to improve the current issues of abuses, deprivations, psychological healing, and appropriate rehabilitation treatment and healing. So please join us to provide your feedback as everyone's voice matters. We are going to have Mariam Jacobs from the Netherlands, psychosocial therapist, coming back on with us today, although she will be with us on Wednesday, which is her usual time. Last Wednesday, I was interviewing Mariam Jacobs when a caller called in from South Dakota. Chinupa Buhamani is a Native Indian who I have allowed to have the radio show My Time on Fridays and Saturdays to voice his opinion and to do his own show. He came on our show last week. He called in, and he was quite upset because I didn't want to get involved in an issue between him and a government official who was calling in as well. I want everyone to know that when we speak about these issues of abuses, deprivations, provocations, all these things that are going on in this country and around us, in our environment, we're doing this to try to bring awareness to everyone. I do not want to get involved in other people's radio shows, and I want everyone to know this. The audience, I'm sure, was listening into this whole discussion, and we're going to be discussing that today. But right now, I'd like to bring Mariam Jacobs on with us.
Helen.
Mariam, are you on?
Yes, I am on. I was talking to my daughter.
How are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Good. I was just introducing the show to the audience, and I was bringing up the fact that last Wednesday, when we had you on the show, we had a caller calling in, and apparently there's some dispute or some controversial things going on between the caller and the this Joe that he spoke about. One of the things that I was kind of upset with was after the show, on his show, there was some mention about myself not wanting to identify with their race or not wanting to go against them versus the white man. When they speak about the white man, they're talking about the government, but they don't clarify it when they have their show, and they talk about the white people. And as I tried to explain to them last week, and I have tried to explain before, when they speak about the whites, they need to clarify what they're talking about, because we have too much stereotypical views going on in this country as it is now. People have to realize this country now is multiracial. And because of my background and my history, I was called a half-breed. And I am a half-breed, and I didn't appreciate it when they came on. So these are some of the things that I want to talk about today to get some clarification so that people know and understand when we have these radio shows, we're going to have a lot of debates going on. I just don't want them to get to the point where they're feeling that they're listening to a show that's just one-sided. I know that we have a lot of issues in this country. We are a divided country. We have a lot of issues. And I'll tell you, our legislative members are very divided as well. They're like children going back and forth, arguing and debating and getting angry with one another when they're supposed to be leading this country, the United States of America. Another issue I have is when we talk about America, this is the United States of America. People try to change it to one version, which is America. The United States of America is respected by many, many countries around the world because of the unity, because we have representatives from every country in this country alone. When we talk about America, we're not talking about the United States. We are talking about the United States now. We have our Native Indian friends who have their show and come on our show and talk about the white man and all the oppression that they've gone through. But we have to realize, too, that times have changed. as I said, this is a multicultural, multiracial country, and we need to stop with all of the biases that are going on in this country. I'm getting to the point now where when I let someone use my radio time, and I'm going to tell you, this is the government official that Chinupa Gulamani keeps mentioning, and he's coming on. I'd like to have some feedback from him. Okay, is this Joe? Okay, apparently he's not talking, he's listening, but these are some of the things that are going on between he and our Native Indian man, and I'm getting to the point now where I don't want to be in the middle of anybody's little feud. We have enough things going on in this country and around the world with the COVID virus. We have this. We have these tornadoes, we have these earthquakes, we have these fires and floods. Everything mentioned in the Bible is coming to pass, and people don't even know it. And these are issues that need to be acknowledged and need to be prepared for. We have China and we have Russia going at, these two are now allies. We are now in the middle of all of this controversial issues going on in other countries. And if we don't get our acts together in this country, we're going to be attacked from the inside, not the outside. As they say, there's so much division, there's so much going on in this country right now, we don't have to worry about being attacked by any country outside of the United States. People have to appreciate what they have here. We have been blessed with a country that is so supposed to be united. We have been blessed with so many things that other people in other countries do not have. We have the food, we have the clothing, we have the shelter, we have everything. While there are so many people around the world that are starving, that are without shelter, without food, without clothing. The United States has to get it together. And the incarceration, we have mass incarceration in this country. And Mariam, I would like to have you explain a little bit to the audience once again about the differences, the comparison between the prisons in other countries and the prisons in the United States. We have interviewed Franz Kurz from Germany, who says the same thing. This is the only country in the world with mass incarceration, and we are among the highest of human rights violations. And we go into other countries to tell them about their human rights violations when we have it in our own country.
Yeah, I think that's a sad thing, Leona, because I think the one big difference between the prison systems in Northern Europe and the United States is that we keep our incarcerated people, we see them as our fellow citizens instead of disposables. And what I see, unfortunately, in the United States is that people in the prison system are no longer considered citizens for a lot of people, and they are getting hugely dehumanized, which is against human rights, because, you know, if I look at concentration camps in China or the work camps in Russia, there is not so much difference with the prison system in the United States. And that has to do with a point of view. And it also has to do, of course, with the million-dollar industry from the corporal power. I think that's the biggest problem. So because we see our incarcerated people as fellow citizens, we want them to be rehabilitated. We ought to do that. That's human, I think.
I still have a problem with the taking away the voting rights of incarcerated individuals. Because as I mentioned last week, when they had that January 6th event at the Capitol and that destruction, these were citizens of the United States. These were military. These were law enforcement. These were people who were supposed to be protecting this country, not destroying it. Yet they have their voting rights. We have 2.3 million people in prisons and jails who have lost their voting rights because they are incarcerated, even though they have done nothing to damage or destroy their country. So this country has people that cannot vote behind those prison walls, yet they have people that can vote that are trying to destroy not only the Capitol, but the country. I have a real problem with that, and I have been really trying to bring awareness to that these people should have their rights given back to them. Maine and Vermont are two states in the United States that have not taken away their voting rights. And that's why I can't understand why all these other states would. And we have another caller, and I just see if you have to say 918. State your name, please. You want to listen or you want to speak? Okay, we have another one that wants to listen. We have a country full of people that want to listen, and they have a problem with what's going on, but nothing is getting resolved because of the conflict that's going on and the confusion and the lack of motivation for people. We need to bring all these things out. We need to find a way to help. There are so many legislative members across the country now that are working on criminal justice reform. We need to support them. When they talk about these things, when they bring out these things, getting rid of solitary confinement, getting rid of restrictive housing blocks. And Mariam, you have talked so many times about that, the damaging effects of the solitary confinement and restrictive blocks. And again, I'm going to bring up the one about the man that was put in solitary confinement for 695 days and he came out barking like a dog. I want to also bring out that Daryl Rainey from Florida, who was put in the shower stall by some guards in Florida and scalded to death. They left him in that shower stall until every bit of skin and muscle separated from the bones of his body. The prisoners on that block kept hearing the screaming, begging for his life. The guards walked away laughing. These are some of the issues that people need to be aware of because they have not a clue what's going on behind those prison walls. We have a media that is one-sided. They will report everything that happens with individuals. They will even blow it out of proportion sometimes about these individuals that commit offenses. Yet they don't talk enough about the things that do. Media has to go into the prisons. They have to stop going in. They have to stop seeing what's going on. People always stereotype prisoners. They have to realize they are wrongfully convicted behind those prison walls. There are first-time offenders serving life and life without parole. There are victims who became offenders because of traumas that happened in their childhood, their lives. There are so many people now, the Department of Youth Services, they're putting these youth in adult prisons rather than keeping them in juvenile detention or whatever it may be. These are problems as well. These need to be resolved.
Yeah,
they don't expose these people enough, and they need to be exposed.
Yeah, but I think also it starts with in politics where politicians speak about being hard on crime, hard on drugs, like, you know, the war on crime. It's like a war. They even use these words. And it's like, you know, the tougher the politician, the more chance he has to become president. It's like, you know, it's like a game. Instead of looking at the problem of criminality, it's you know, crime is used to get votes. And there, I think the harshness starts. And then what you say, it's stereotyping people, and it's, you know, in the prison system, we talk about the inmate, while the inmate does not exist. There are 2.3 million people behind bars, and a large part has committed a crime, but they are people, they are not crimes. So it's really about the perspective on what does it mean to be a human being, and what does rehabilitation means, and is that what we want? Do we want these people to be healed or rehabilitated, or do we keep on punishing them? And
you know,
I think people have to learn to listen, you know, to think more about that. What does it mean when a human being is incarcerated instead of an inmate? What does rehabilitation mean for somebody? It's very, you know, I think you get biases when we don't listen to each other. When you talked about last week, what happened was it's important to listen. It's important. I also, you know, I am white, but I do understand the emotions and what Chinupa said and how he feels about the white man. I do understand it. I acknowledge what he feels. I have been diving in the history of the Native Americans, and I was crying too. I felt it inside myself too. So I do acknowledge it and I can listen to it. I don't feel offended because of my white skin, because I do understand what he's saying. At the same time, so we do have to acknowledge the history of the Native American people. I, for myself, even think that Native Americans hold a wisdom that we need in nowadays, that we have lost. So we should work together with them. But we cannot stay in this angriness, because then we get paralyzed and then things get not solved. The current problems cannot be solved because we stay angry and we stay paralyzed. But I do acknowledge the pain and the suffer that he carries from his history, from his roots, and it's huge what has happened.
You know, I can understand that, but at the same time, when we think about it, what happened is after that show, I got a message from him, from another Native Indian that was on the show apparently listening, and this is what the message said, and I was quite upset with this. He said, "Chinupa, my brother, you have given so much to this Leona girl," which he hasn't given me anything, "but she puts the white race first. I have heard a black girl today speak without a taste in her own mouth, meaning she has no language. You are so right. This Leona girl has forgotten her taste for being a black girl. We can all," let me just see what this, and you know, this infuriated me because this was unnecessary. I don't even know who this person was, but he was one of the Native Indians. "And our taste of language that cracker took from us and replaced it as a Christian point of salvation. I am too going to stop getting on her show. And Brother Chinupa, I, Dekabuta Williams, stands with you in what you believe in this country is your country, my brother. A doctor by the name of Ray Edmond told me so much about you and how you stood against white supremacists." You know, these are kind of things. I don't disagree with them. There's a real problem. And it's not, when you think about it, I don't like the whites, but I'm not even for the black. I'm not for the NAACP. As far as I'm concerned, they're about nothing. Black Lives Matter, who are they helping? They're not helping anyone behind bars. We have.
Well, I think.
Can you hold on 1 second, Marianne? 307, state your name, please. Okay, Marianne, go ahead and finish what you were saying. I'm sorry.
Yeah, what comes up in me right now is that I can understand that the pain and the angriness from a lot of Native Americans is still there because the white people never learned the lessons. The issue, you know, if the white people would have learned their lesson and it would have changed, it would have been different. But it's still, the same problem is in fact still there, same with the black people. You see it in the incarceration in the prisons. I mean, black people are only 15% of the whole population, but they are half of the prison population. So you see that the same problems are maintained. No lessons have been learned. And so the pain stays, the wound cannot turn into a scar. It stays open. And I think that might be, I don't know, but that might be the big problem. That's why you keep these biases towards each other. That's why you keep this racism, because these issues have never been solved. It maintains. It's still there. There is still a form of slavery in the prisons, for instance. That's why I do understand you. I understand your pain and what you say about this email. And I do, at the same time, I understand the pain of Chinupa. I would never take a side, not for you or Chinupa or myself. I always try to look at what is happening between two parties who disagree or whatever, without taking a side.
And that's the way I am usually. But last week, he brought it into my show, and then he took it into his show. I want to let people know, I don't get involved in disputes. I respect people and I expect respect from people. I did not get the respect that I deserve from my Indian brother. I'll tell you, when all of these things happen, we all have a lesson to learn. We all need to change. That's the problem with this country and other countries. That's why we go to war with these people, because these people have lost innocent loved ones. They have lost their children. They have lost their parents. They have lost so much, those people in other countries, and they have so much anger for this country because we don't know enough about their culture to go in and start wars with them or finish up wars that are started. We have no business going into any other country. We have enough problems in our own backyard that need to be addressed. So yeah, when I have a show going on, I don't want somebody that has their own show coming on and trying to sway everyone into their way of thinking. We in this country, you look at the blacks have had a lot of oppression. The Indians have had oppression. Look at the Irish and the English. They had oppression. I mean, they were going at it when they first came over. People have got to change their way of thinking. Instead of all of this, they have their oppression, and then they go off judging someone else, prejudging someone else, or looking at someone's pigmentation of their skin and judging them based on the pigmentation. And yet all DNA came from the continent of Africa in the Middle East before the flood. It all came from one continent. People don't realize they migrated all over the world. Naturally, the complexion is going to change. It's so immature, the way people think, and this is what really bothers me. We have a caller, 323. Do you have something you'd like to say?
Oh, yes, ma'am. You know, I'm just listening to your show. This here is my first time, you know, checking you out. You know, and I'm just sitting back enjoying the conversation. You know, you got a lot of passion going on, and you're making a lot of sense, you know, so I'm just sitting back observing.
Well, thank you. Thank you for speaking out. We have a whole bunch of people on the line, but not enough of them speaking. I just want people to know.
I've got a few things to say.
Okay,
I got
say
a few
it.
Things to say. Yes, ma'am. Okay. I think what we need to do is deal with our self-sufficiency economically, politically, and educationally. See, we've got to get our children out of the public indoctrination centers.
That's the truth.
As they commonly refer to as public schools. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. And then, two, and then that deal with a whole lot of issues in regard to... Okay, in regard to our education, our commercial infrastructures, you know, we need to build up on this because, see, this is what everybody else is doing, but they're cashing in off of us on a collective basis, except us. And this is why, you know, we got so much homelessness within the black community. This is why we got so much, self-hatred going on. You know, it's kind of like that the hatred that we have is internalized. And you are absolutely correct about Black Lives Matter. You see what I mean? It's because, you know, they have, an alternative agenda, which I think is not in our best interest.
Yeah. And I agree with you. There's too much. And I'll tell you, as far as vocational, these kids that are dropping out of high school, these kids that are out in the street joining gangs, I say this all the time. We have a vocational school. My home was built on Cape Cod, where I grew up in Osterville. My house was built by the Bountiful Vocational High School. And back then, they used to build one house a year. All you had to pay for was the material. When I sold my house, it was a five-bedroom house. When the people that bought my house sold it the following year for $250,000. This is a house that was built by the Boston Vocational School. We have the city, New York, Boston, Massachusetts, all these places where they call it the ghetto. There's buildings that are all, they need to be renovated and everything. Get these high school kids, these vocational schools, get them out building, the carpentry, the electricians, the masonry. Get them out in these communities and let them do something hands-on. Give them some feeling of worthiness. They don't do this. The teachers, a lot of teachers discourage these kids in school because the kids are not up to their level of doing the studies. So let these kids go out with their professors or their teachers, go out in the communities and try to do something. People work. They had vocational students working on automobiles. The kids would go and they would be working on people's automobiles. We have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. Get these people in these long-term residential treatment facilities for anger management or substance abuse addictions, mental health. They're not doing this. They're throwing them all in like cattle. They're throwing them into the prisons. This is a major, major problem.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am, indeed it is, and I believe of, I forgot the good doctor's name, talking about the prison industrial complex, you know, the modern day Jim Crow,
Mary and Jacobs, that's what you have.
I'm sorry?
Mariam Jacobs, that, she was just talking about that, psychosocial therapist.
Yes, okay. And as you said, and then, you know, and I noticed, you know, from my high school years, they took all the trades out the schools. Like, you used to have auto shops, you used to have wood shops, you used to have the electrical shops.
Exactly.
So therefore, at least the youth would have some type of skill to fall back on to make a living as they pursue, you know, their higher education. And then, you know, I host a podcast as well, too, but I'm not going to announce it, you know, as in regard to for respect for your show.
No, feel free to announce.
My name is Shabaka Sankore, and I am the executive producer of the podcast, Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced, and we are expanding it. We do have a show on Sunday nights that's hosted, you know, by one of our great hosts. Also, too, our regular show comes on Tuesday nights at 6 p.m. in the Pacific time zone, so we are having an episode tonight. You know, Google us. We do get a little controversial. We do go off the hook. We have had people call in with hatred and their ignorance, and we enjoy it. And what
but
I mean
know,
by that
I
is
agree.
Because there's – yes, ma'am.
I want to say one thing, and I tell the audience all the time, if you have a problem, you want to criticize, I learned. That's how my education came in. It wasn't just from college. It was from taking a lot of criticism. Even every job that I've had, working for the Cape and Islands Department of Social Services, I've worked for every home health agency on Cape Cod per diem and got private duty from it. A tragedy happened in my life, and I'm in a situation now where all of that is in the past, but I do my volunteer work with my organization and also with this radio show. I don't mind taking criticism, and that's the problem we have in this country. People are afraid to be themselves. They're afraid to speak out. They're afraid to talk about anything. That's why so many people are in prison. They're holding back all the childhood traumas they went through. A lot of them growing up without parents, without siblings, and substance abuse issues. You know, we need to open up. Everybody needs to speak. And we have another call. Excuse me. Let me just see. 307. No, 575.
Yeah, yeah. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, this is Devin Oldman from Northern Arapahoe in Wyoming.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Hey. Can you have the gentleman who just talked give me his podcast again? I want to listen in this Sunday.
Yes. What is your name again? I'm sorry. The one that with the podcast.
Devin.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. Okay. The first name is Shabaka. Okay. And the last name is Sankore, and the podcast is Shabaka's Black Experience Enhanced. And we've been in existence 5 years now, and, you know, it's expanding, and we're just reaching out. And we appreciate people calling us in is because we've had people call us all kind of names and things of that nature right there, but that just tells us that we're getting somewhere, you know. And yeah, you can Google us, and our phone number to call in is 516-418-5996, and you know, we get it all. I mean, we've had people come up there, call me every type of NGR term, arrogant black so-and-so, this, that, there, the other, but as they say, steel sharpens steel, so we accept all kind of criticism, you know what I mean, and what have you, but at the same token, we research our episodes, we research our data of what we speak of, you see, and then, you know, let the haters hate and just be great.
Can you put your information on my Facebook page and I will share it?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. What is your Facebook page?
It's under Leona Brando, Brandao. And as far as name calling, I have to say this is because this is the God's honest truth, and I tell everyone this. A lot of these people that have this hatred in them for people of different colors, people of color, it's because their parents raised them not to love one another, not to have that love. The parents took that time they could have had with their children in a precious way of showing them love and compassion.
Homeless men toward Avalon Parkway.
I don't know who's making the noise in the background. Some children or someone's talking. If I'm going to mute everybody, if this is going to be a problem, because I don't do a show with a lot of confusion in the background. But what I was going to say is sometimes when we're growing up, we want to give our children the best. We want to spend every moment of our time teaching them love and compassion and mercy. We want them to not make fun of other people, regardless of their race, religion, culture, their age, or whatever gender. We want to teach them love, and we want to teach them to love others and to help those who are less fortunate than we are. Some people take their blessings that God has given them and spend it on teaching their kids how to hate others. And if their children, and unfortunately it's a cycle, it's when I was doing social work, sometimes hyperactivity, the kids would be all over the wall because that's the way their parents were. But the parents weren't at fault because that's the way they were raised. Somewhere along the line, people have to break that cycle of hatred and racism. But sometimes it's so instilled in them from way, way back in the days of the KKK and all of this that they don't know how to end it. So as a result, they teach their kids, they spend their moments teaching their kids the same kind of hatred that they were taught. And I know what, as I said last Wednesday, and Marion Dacos will tell you, I was on the show and I said, the reason I have so much anger in me, it's because my mother was Lebanese, my biological father was African American and Indian, and my adoptive father was Cape Verdean. I have experienced racism because my mother was considered an outcast when she had us, and she was right from Worcester, Massachusetts. My only child in his last year of college ended up in a first-time relationship, and it was with a Caucasian girl. And not only was her family racist, but to this day, her family is out for revenge. They have been doing all of these things throughout. So when I talk about the hatred and the anger and the frustration I have it. But it's not just towards the whites, as I say, because I try to get help in the past from all races. And what happens with our African-American brothers and sisters, our Hispanics, our black, brown, beige, and red, what happens is when they get to a certain level, they look down upon their own, and they complain about the racism going on in this country. Yet they can't connect with their own people because they themselves sometimes think they're better than their own people. So how do we resolve an issue like that? That's why I say radio stations like this are good to talk about it, to get it out in the open. Because I have told my African-American brothers and sisters and my black and Hispanic brothers and sisters, I have told them, in order to get respect, we need to respect one another, and we need to respect ourselves. Now, my Indian brother that was on the radio show the other day was using language that not in a million years did I have ever heard in my own family. And the language showing disrespect for the people of color that he's talking about, respecting. There's a lot of things we have to learn, a lot of changes we have to make in order to get where we are going. And we have to teach, we have to give our young people role models. We have brothers out there that could be teaching them how to pull up their pants because these kids are walking around with their pants halfway down to their knees. And we have rappers out there, adult rappers, who are doing the same thing instead of teaching these kids anything. If we want to help these kids, if we want to show respect for our own people and the people of others, we have to respect ourselves. We have to educate these kids. We have to help these kids. These kids are out in the street looking for support. They're looking for something, and they can't find it, so they're joining up with one another. When two people get together that are both hurting and they have no place to go, they're going to get together, and then more of them are going to come together. And what do you have after you get a whole bunch of them together? A lot of angry, frustrated young kids, especially of color. These things really... And that's why I'm telling you, when somebody comes on my show and talks about I should just be focusing on what they're focusing on their show, I don't want to hear it. I don't go on their show and try to tell them how to run it. But I do know one thing. We need a change. We need to come together, all races. We need to respect one another. And those Caucasians out there, the whites, if they want to continue to hate, let them hate. Let them call us the N-word or whatever. Because nothing, words don't hurt me. Remember the saying. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never hurt me. So we need to focus on forgetting about the names. Let them call us whatever they want. Just don't put the hands on us. Don't.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is Devin again. From Wind River, Wyoming, out in the Northern Arapaho tribe. So I joined a little late. I don't know. I guess what the topic is, but I'll just go off of what you just talked on. So I used to work for the tribal government here, you know, and we live on a 2.2 million acre reservation. We share it with the Eastern Shoshone tribe. I think their populace is somewhere around 6,000 enrolled members, and we have around 10,900 enrolled members, right? And so we make up about 55% of Fremont County, which is, you know, it's a place that includes about four major towns within central Wyoming. And so we have different municipality zones, you know, different, I guess you could say, tribal borders. We have variations of tribal police. You know, we have the FBI that has jurisdiction out here. We have the Department of Criminal Investigation that has this jurisdiction out here for Wyoming. We also have the sheriff, the Fremont County Sheriffs. We have the Lander Police Department, Riverton Police Department, Hudson Police Department, Shoshone Police Department. We have all kinds of districts and zones that we have to navigate through, right? We have Forest Service lands. We have Park Service lands here. We have state parks lands. We have all kinds of lands that we have to navigate and learn about, right? And so the only reason I know all this information is because I used to work for the tribe as what's known as the Tribal Stork Preservation Officer. If you're not familiar with that, you can Google the Dakota Access Pipeline. We were the people that consulted with the government prior to the No DAPL movement, and we pretty much got told that we had no say as to what happened with the Dakota Access Pipeline. So that's kind of how the whole tribal spectrum of things became aware of what was occurring with the Dakota Access Pipeline. So part of my background is, you know, I was raised traditionally by my grandparents and, you know, by my mother, right? And so we grew up very poor, grew up in a home on the reservation with no running water, no electricity, right? So we had to haul water sometimes from the river. We had to cut our own wood in the wintertime, you know, all that good stuff. Grew up foraging with my grandmother. She taught us how to, you know, do the different plants, identify different plants. You know, I grew up hunting. I know how to, you know, skin a deer, an elk, an antelope, you know, within 10, 15 minutes just by myself, right? And that's quartered and deboned. And so those things are life values that were taught to me at a young age, right? Not because, I guess you could say, my family wanted to, right? But another sense they had to because, you know, me and my brothers and sisters, we didn't have father figures, right? And so that's the problem with a lot of children on the reservation. Disparity across the whole country, right, is that aspect of, you know, the other half of a human's teaching system, right, which is a male, or they're missing a mother. Okay, so right away the familial structure on the basis of psychology is shattered, you know, within the first five, you know, or even birth, from birth to five, right? Parents usually don't stick together if you're of color. Right, I don't know what the statistics are, but that's how the system has been set up, right? To keep us away from each other. That's how the Department of Family Services system works. That's how the court system works. The judicial system works. Everything, right? And so the reason I'm talking about all this stuff is because this is exactly what happened to me, right? My father, he was never in my life because he was he ended up doing things that, you know, when I was younger that prevented him from being a father, right? And he was a criminal. And when I was 10 years old, him and his stepmother, my stepmother, ended up killing my little sister, right? And you can Google his name. It's Andrew Yellowbear Jr. And he was the first capital murder crime in Wyoming history because they killed my little sister. And so I had to go through the court system, you know, and my mom made me go with her, and so did all my aunts, all his sisters, you know. And I had to go through the court system and watch the trial and stuff, right? And so I had to watch all the autopsies. I had to listen to all the firsthand accounts. I had to listen to all the witnesses. I had to listen to all the sheriff's testimonies. I had to listen to the judge. I had to listen to the jury. All these things, right? For a 10-year-old to really grasp and wrap his head around, right? I've seen the pictures and the videos from the autopsy, you know, of them dissecting my little sister on a table. And, you know, that was really traumatizing for me, right? But I'm glad that I experienced it, you know, in my short 28 years of life, because it taught me so much about the U.S. court system. And so being that, right, growing up and, you know, coming into my adolescent years, right, I became really troubled. You know, I started getting involved in drugs and alcohol, right? I started becoming a criminal, right? And I was pretty much a product of my environment, right? But when what changed me was, you know, I guess you could say when I ran into one of my old people, right? And they asked what I was doing with myself. And this is well after, you know, I had pretty much got a deferred felony case. I robbed a restaurant and, you know, took all the money, and I went in the back and stole all the liquor too. But I pretty much was able to get a deferred felony from that, and I was able to, you know, beat the case in a state courtroom and plea bargain it down to a malicious misdemeanor is what they call it in Wyoming. And I had to pay like over $22,000 to state of Wyoming in restitution. Right. And so this was after I did all this stuff and I almost completed my probation. Right. And I was kind of had to steer clear because the system made me right. And it wasn't by my own choice facing, you know, 5 to 10 years in state penitentiary. But so I was kind of behaving, and I had a job out in Casper, Wyoming, which is about 120 miles northwest of the reservation here. And so I came back home one year for a break. I think it was Christmas, and I ran into one of my elders, you know, and, you know, I'll never forget what he said, you know, and he asked me, he said, you know, where are you going? You know, and I didn't understand what he meant, you know, until about 2 years later, I got home and I seen him in his sweat lodge again. And he looked at me in a sweat lodge and he said, you know, this is where you're going. And the concept kind of grasped me, and it was like, boom, you know, and I understood it. Right, there was like something that woke up inside of me, right? And it was, you know, it was a spiritual awakening for me. And from there, I moved forward to walking on, you know, what we know as the Red Road as Native Americans, right? And I've been sober and, you know, pretty much steered clear from that, you know, that traumatized being that I used to be that was given to me by the system, right? And so then I embarked on a journey of, you know, exploration and learning and, you know, accountability on behalf of the tribe, right? I worked for the tribe for 4 years, you know, and I served as a tribal historic preservation officer for the tribe. What we did is we went to museums, you know, we went to different various forms of state lands, of forest, you know, federal lands, pretty much anywhere they were planning to utilize a federal dollar or a federal mineral, right, or a federal surface land, right, they would need to consult with tribes. And so within that spectrum of things, it's based on each tribe's, you know, I guess you could say their known traditional ancestral migratory territory, right? And so that's pretty much whatever area our people used to be in, we're supposed to register it with the feds, and from there they send us information from each department and each department's organization, you know, whether it's a subchapter or a chapter, right, to be able to send us information. And so I learned a lot working for the tribe, you know, and there's a lot of subject matter out there that would change the whole course of U.S. history and the whole course of the scientific community, along with the universal or the university and the college system, right?
Well,
and
see,
so what I mean by that
taught,
is what,
you were taught, and that's what, you know, sometimes education in colleges and universities doesn't mean anything. You're getting a piece of paper. But when you get out there and you're doing things, there was a time when they had, in the United States, they had the CEDA program, job partnership, where a lot of people from poorer communities and school dropouts and everything could get jobs, and the government paid a portion and the people that hired paid a portion. It worked out fine. But teaching, that's what we need to do. We need to try to get that life experience, not just a piece of paper in the colleges where they take up all your money and do nothing. And
That's exactly what I'm getting at. I'm getting at saying that people are wasting their lives going to colleges thinking they're learning something about themselves or about the country that they're in, because it's really all just a big fat fraud. It's a lie. And that's what I learned working for the government, you know, my tribal government, is I went to the Smithsonian. There's 14 different institutions of the Smithsonian, and they pretty much stole every history from every country, you know, across the whole world. They're just like the Britain Museum, right, over in Great Britain. And so There are things that are, you know, in these museums, like I said, they would rewrite the whole spectrum of history itself, right? And the important thing about that, what I'm getting at, is that there's truth out there that lies within the land as well, right? So when one of the things that I've always learned about, you know, working with white people is you know, they always say, well, you know, Indians have no right talking about you know, how we came here and killed them. You know, they were doing that thousands of years before we came, you know, and I always disagree with that, because I used to work, that was exactly what we did with the THPO office, was archaeology. And so I had access to, you know, thousands and thousands of reports regarding millions of acres across the Great Plains region, a whole 18-state region, right? And that whole 4 years, you know, across the like 350 projects we were involved in, that we had legal contracts with federal government agencies to be a part of, for the surveys and for the, you know, the addendums to the monitoring for the construction developments and stuff. We never found something that you will find stretched across every other continent in the world, right? And that's something that we define as mass burial sites. You'll never find an area in North America or even Canada, along with South America, where thousands and thousands of people were killed at one time, where they got together and, you know, big armies and fought each other to the death. You'll never find that in America, because we had a respect for value and love and even human life. And so that would, well, how we fought was, you know, based off of, I guess you could call it chivalry, right? I mean, I don't like using that term, but it was based off of the ability that one people's, you know, hero, I guess you could say, or, you know, mightiest warrior, you guys called him the chief, right, against the other people's, you know, sub-counterpart. And from there, however that battle went between those two, depending on there they were with the creator of all things, right, that's how we understood life. And so there was no need for thousands of people to go together at one time and murder each other and bury each other in a mass pit, right?
There's
so we were not savages.
There's no reason.
We weren't savages.
There's no reason.
No, we weren't savages in.
We have a.
We weren't savages in
a.
Hold on. Let me talk.
You've been.
Unless you want to cut me off, then.
No, just let me introduce these people. Okay, we have 575.
All right, well, I think this is the last time I'm calling you to show, man. That's kind of rude. I guess you don't want to hear the true history of America.
No,
but,
you can talk. You know, I allowed you to talk. I've got a whole line here. We got about 40 minutes left. So
keep spreading the lies, man. Keep spreading the lies. You're never going to learn the truth about life or history, man. That's all I got to say. You want about the world. You're never going to learn the truth about history.
I have to have a talk with Chinupa. I'll talk to Chinupa about it, okay? Because he knows what's going on. Now, 734, please. 918. We have two 918. Do you have anything you want to say? Okay. So now he could have gone back to what he was saying, but he got ignorant and decided to drop off. So we'll just let it go at that. But these are some of the things that happen. People come on. Do they come on because they want to really get into the topic and try to brainstorm or talk about these issues? I allowed him to talk as long as he could. But going off the subject, I mean, I know about his work history now. But what I wanted to say was, he did mention something about. Was he the one that said that his parents killed his sister?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so.
I wanted to respond to that, because that was, I felt really bad when he said that, because that shows the history. I wanted to ask him about his father and mother, because somewhere along the line, they might have come from a really dysfunctional background too, and that's usually what happens. And I don't know, Marion, if you want to speak on something like that, but when he said that, it kind of touched me.
No, it has happened in its youth, in its past. Well, I found it interesting what he was talking about, his history of the Native Americans. And I think what I got from it also was what happened to them was went with a lot of betrayal. They have been betrayed. the Native Americans.
You know, that's what
I find painful to see in your country is that minorities, when you look at their past, it's not only the Native Americans, but it's also the African Americans. There was a lot of, and still is a lot of betrayal in it. It's a game of betrayal, and that's what you see now back in mass incarceration. You have to look when you look at mass incarceration, you have to ask yourself, who benefits from locking up all these people? Who benefited in the past of slavery? Who benefited from killing all these Native Americans? And it was not a fair fight. You can also have a fair fight, but this was betrayal and lies. There's a lot of lies and deceit. It's in the past of America, of the United States, and it's still there. That's why there is a lot of poverty. For instance, I saw a film. It was from the BBC. It was about the nuclear bomb on Hiroshima. And it showed history, historical facts, and it showed how the United States had bombed all kinds of cities, but it saved Hiroshima because they wanted to drop the nuclear bomb as a test. It means it's a test on human beings, and the same mechanism you see back in mass incarceration, you see back in all the homeless people. So that's I think what the problem is. When you look at racism that we're talking about now is, and I've mentioned it many times before, racism is there because as long as people are divided, they don't protest against the people who want to maintain racism. But people don't see it. They keep fighting each other, but they don't see that in the end they all are the victims of the same party, and that's really the 1% rich and the corporations. The corporate power is mixed with politics. It's called the revolving door in your country, where you see that big corporations and big politicians in Washington, they go hand in hand. It's more the corporate power that, for instance, that makes the law than politicians. And people on the streets, the regular people, the communities, they don't see that they are used to serve these big powers. And I hope one day they will see and wake up and unite and protest. Ga je weer daar? Oké, was lekker.
Ben je klaar?
Nee, maar ik hoor niks meer.
Oh. Ja,
I lost connection. I think I'm... Ah, goed zo, Daniel. Sorry, I lost
Hello.
Connection.
Yes,
Hello?
You want to. Yes, you want to speak. Say your name and say what you have to say, please.
Yeah, this is Rachel from Oklahoma, and hearing all this and about the dysfunctional, referring to that man's parents, well, that dysfunctional was placed white man did to them when they break them down, incarcerated them on a reservation, introduced drugs and alcohol, trauma. From the boarding school era, but when you phrase it, he's got some dysfunction on his family. We need to put that dysfunctional where it belongs, and that's on the white man, because our people would not be dysfunctional if it was not for the white man what they did. We got to put that blame where it belongs, because if they left the Native people alone, left our people alone, we wouldn't even be hearing that word dysfunctional right now. But we've got the whole system set up against us. The whole system set up against us. Every law, DOJ department, White House, qualified immunity is giving the permission, whether it's to the man on the street or those guards in that prison, to treat those prisoners, to treat the people out here, the minorities, the way they do. And you're never going to get those politicians to take that on because they've given themselves that right. They've given themselves a right to cause dysfunctionality in all the races of people out in this country because they think that's their superior right. And when I hear that, well, let's talk about the white dysfunctionality out here. They're all dysfunctional to hell and back. But we never get in them because, oh, it's behind closed doors, let's keep it quiet. They're all perfect. No, they're not. They're the ones that causes all this dysfunctionality out here. I heard you speak about the black boys need because they wear their pants down. You were so right about that. But here's the thing. Who put that dysfunctionality in them? They've got anger towards the white man, and they turn it on each other just like the natives do each other. But who's to blame for all that? It is the white man. But we keep trying to turn to the white man and his system, and what do? They laugh at us. All those prisoner guards, all these policemen out here, I just watched a video this morning where I heard a police officer say, fuck that constitutional crap. And this is an officer. This is an officer who utilizes that constitutional to allow him to wear that badge to incarcerate these men into that penal system and they get mistreated. But he swears an oath when he puts that hand up. Contradictive liar. He swears to that oath, but then he goes against that oath, and then he pisses on that Constitution he swears an oath to. The problems start way down and rise up, and those problems go all the way back since these white people went over to the rest of the earth colonizing. They've made the rules, and they need to be held accountable for what a lot of dysfunction they have caused in minorities, societies. But we want to keep turning to them for help. And like Malcolm X said, why do you want to turn to the institution that's making the rules that's keeping you incarcerated and down? They're not going to help you. We've got to help ourselves.
Yeah, you're right.
And it is about educating our children to the demonic mindset of these white people. Don't get involved with them. Don't get involved with them because they will burn you. And your one's going to pay the price for it. And that's about all I've got to say. But that problem starts even down at the officers. Those officers don't even respect their own constitution. They piss on it. But they want to hold it up to us, citizens out here, all these minorities that they incarcerate. And then they get put through that hell in these prisons. It's white supremacy.
I'll let you, if you want to say something.
No, I don't want to say anything. That's what I was about to
listen. Okay.
Leona.
Yes.
I have to go out of the show in a few minutes because I get a visitor.
Oh,
normally
okay.
Normally we are on the show on Wednesdays.
We will definitely have you on tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm
for
sorry,
being
but. Yeah, it was nice. Sorry that I have to quit now, but my visitor can arrive every moment.
Okay.
Yes.
Now we have 734. Would you like to state your name and say something? 918. We have 2918.
I this is Amina Dill from 734. Okay.
Okay.
I get what people saying, but you can't board a train any on what a lot of people are the same, because you got different races of people who have the same type of mentality. You got good and bad in all races of people. So not all white people bad. You got the good and bad with them. So you can't, it's just your system that you got to blame the system for how they treat people.
Exactly.
But you can't blame maybe all the white people. Because you got good white people, you got bad black people, you got black red people. Every race of people has its own bad and good. So
well, you know what
I'm just
I have on with us as well a prisoner who grew up, as some of you earlier said, without a father and without siblings. This was a struggle for him because he had something happen to him as a child, too. As I mentioned, a lot of people that are incarcerated have had childhood traumas, which are ultimately led to their incarcerations. As the one said before, the one that get off the show, you know, seeing his baby sister killed. These are a lot of these things are happening. And the people stereotype prisoners, but if they took the time to sit with each prisoner and learn or listen to what they had to say, they would find out what they were going through at the time of their crime, at the time of their offense. And so what I'd like to do sometime is have a show where we can have a few prisoners call in and talk about what led to their incarceration. The racism has a lot to do with a lot of these incarcerations that are going on. And we have a prisoner that's on listening to us right now who went through that. He was a four-year college student. He worked. He lifted weights. He exercised. He did all the things that a kid without a father and without a sibling did. He was a role model for others. And his last year of college, he ended up getting involved with someone that was of Caucasian. And that person was one that was using and lying to and abusing. And when finding out about it, confronting her, she left. But she couldn't leave it at that. She had to keep calling and telling him about her new boyfriend who was white. So these are some of the issues that happen to people that are incarcerated. In the public, they judge without knowing all the facts. We also have to look at, like I mentioned earlier, the media. We have a media out there that they take sides every time. They take sides with those that they know they're going to benefit from, and that is law enforcement. You know, those are people that want to be on the good side in case they themselves were to get stopped with a DUI or whatever it might be, you know, to say, oh, I know this person by first name. But we have a lot of these things that are going on, and people have to realize that there is a difference in every situation that's involved in incarceration, and they have to stop judging. Again, you had mentioned that man earlier had mentioned, you know, the social services. A lot of times, I say this too, they don't teach these people when they're going to college for social work, they don't teach them about cultures. They don't teach them about these things. So when they go into these homes, these people coming out of college are prominent backgrounds. A lot of them are of the Caucasian race. A lot of them have never had children, never had a husband or wife, and they're going to go into these homes that are dysfunctional with single parents or with double parents, with all kinds of things going on, and they're going to try to tell those people what they have to do or else they're going to take their children. When you threaten somebody with taking their children, you know they're going to be resistant and they're going to fight back. So what happens? A social worker will meet with the supervisor. Supervisors most of the time go with the social workers, and then you're in court with the care and protection, a CMP. Children are taken from the home, put in foster homes, and what happens? A lot of these foster homes are abusive. So children are either violated or they're killed. So we have a lot of things that we need to look at in society. People need to look at body language, too. One of the things I learned, and I should have learned a long, long time ago, but I didn't, is body language means a lot. Watch how a person is walking. Watch how they're talking. Watch their demeanor. Watch what's going on with them. And maybe we could prevent somebody from going to prison, from stumbling. And sometimes we learn the hard way, but these are things that we have to learn to look at. And we have to have compassion for people. And we have to have understanding and mercy. And I tell everybody all the time, in the Bible, Moses killed. King David killed. Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, killed. They all were murderers, but yet God forgave them and used them in a big way. So sometimes we don't know why these things happen. It could be that God has a purpose for all these things that are happening, and someday we'll find out what it is. But we can't allow these people that do the name calling, whether it be an N-word or whatever, we can't allow them to affect us. And sometimes we live too much in the past. We need to look at the present and the future. Just like the Constitution, George Washington, whatever it was that was written hundreds and hundreds of years ago, people change, time changes, everything changes. So they need to start drawing up some new rules, regulations, or new constitutions or whatever. But mass incarceration needs to end. We need to focus on trying to get the voting rights back. We need to focus on trying to do away with these prisons. Again, I did the petition. It's got about 570-something signatures. We need more signatures with change.org to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities, whether it's long-term residential substance abuse, whether it's long-term residential mental health, or whether it's long-term residential anger management. These are the things that need to be replaced, because prisons are doing nothing for no one except abusing more, depriving more, keeping people in solitary confinement in our restrictive housing units and all of these things. We need to do away with those. Anyone want to comment on that, please?
We need to get white supremacy out of law enforcement, because that's where it's starting. And those very officers, like I just stated a while ago, they're using the Constitution, but they don't believe in it. They piss on it because of their white superior Nazism beliefs. And they hide behind the badge, those constitutions. They hate it, but at the same time, they use it.
I'm glad you're saying
they're
this.
The ones.
Keep going.
They're the ones that take and get these men set up. I've seen videos where they place drugs. They get them, and they will falsely accuse them and set them up and send them to prison. And then these men go through this crap in these prisons. But what this country needs to do is quit providing this white supremacy with its constitutional rights, to give them the rights to practice their white supremacy and Nazism in this country.
You're exactly right. You know something? I'm glad you're speaking out. And this is Rachel. Is this Rachel? What is your first name? Okay, we have 111 on the phone again. I mean, on the call. 111.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. Was he just saying that white supremacy is a right?
I'm sorry?
Was he just saying that white supremacy, people have the right to practice it?
No, I believe she was saying they don't have the right, but they think they do.
Well, even though I don't agree with white supremacy, unless they're being violent, idiots do have constitutional rights. So someone could, say something that we find offensive, and although it's retarded to us, and although it is not based in logic, they do have the constitutional right. The problem is that we are in 2021, and white supremacists should have evolved in their thinking by now. But I don't think they're the only ones that do this. I think systemically, most of our American and Western institutions do to varying degrees support white supremacy, some in a softer form, some in a harder form. But, the classic example is the white Jesus. It has no foundation in history, in artifacts, where they always make the Jesus character white. Another example would be what happens with our prison systems, especially in America. The disproportionate time and arrest given to black or Latinos that may have weed or cocaine, although weed is getting some freedom. Meanwhile, there's a war on some of the drugs that poor white people do, and their ads and all kinds of campaigns to help them. Similar biases in the school system where around the country, the black schools, public schools tend to fail the kids, and the schools for Anglo-American students do much better, and of course the ones for Asian. I mean, every industry and sector you look at, there's this type of racism. So the idiots that support white supremacy are definitely foolish, because they already have all the perks and benefits. In fact, black farmers recently got a break, and the white farmers lost their minds, and some of the courts pulled back the benefits for the black farmers. So I think most white people are pretty spoiled, and even the ones that aren't racist do benefit from the system, and it's time to give, after 400-plus years, give black folks a break. Take 100
Definitely.
Or 2 years back and say, look, let's cut them slack. But they won't see it, some of them, as that. They will think affirmative action isn't fair, even though they have had affirmative action for over 400 years. So it's very hard.
I'm glad you came on. And I want to say something else, too. I've interviewed a correctional officer. He was a lieutenant in the Montana Department of Corrections. He and his name was Michael Johnson, and his partner was Leslie, I believe it was Leslie Robinson. They are no longer with the department. They wrote a book, though, and they came on the show to talk about, they themselves talked about the injustices in the DOC in Montana. And then I had, his name was Donald J. Vodica. He was a veteran correctional officer in California prison. And Donald, he came on a couple of times to talk about the Department of Corrections in California, the abuses that were going on, all these negative things. And I just wish that correctional officers would come on and talk about these things while they're still working in the system. But because the union, the guards union is so powerful, a lot of them are afraid to do it. So they wait until they retire to talk about it. But when it comes right from them, then you know what is being said by a lot of the incarcerated is true. And that's the sad thing about it, because not enough are coming forward right now. But as far as the racial thing, this is something that people should be spending their time with their loved ones, teaching them about love and hugging them and giving them the love that they need, and not teaching them about hatred, not teaching them to hate somebody because of the pigmentation of their skin. You know, it's sad that people are being brought up this way. And like you said, today is 2021. It's not back in the days. A lot of changes have been made.
Yeah, can I tell you a reason a lot of the corrections officers don't come forward? It's just like why good cops won't come forward and good politicians, because blowing the whistle in our system is not lauded and considered positive. So what does it tell us about the system? That if a police officer or a Wall Street broker or an agent of any law enforcement or a teacher comes forward, the unions and our government help to protect them. Look at what happened to the young man that found a lot of documents on the corruption our government was doing, and they pursued him. There were two of them. One became kind of a woman, but they both have tried to do their best. They got no money. This is not what they did for money. They did it to tell American people, look, our government often is being corrupt and spying on you. So I think it's not just the average trailer park person that might be in the KKK. Of course, not all people in trailer parks are, but very often it's ignorant white folks. But it's not just them. They have a system in place that protects them. And then on the top level, it does seem as though capitalism benefits by keeping certain groups at the bottom, because then you have a guaranteed class and caste of system who that you know you don't have to provide the same gigs to and jobs to, et cetera. And that happens to be darker humans in America and in Britain and in France and in Spain and in Saudi Arabia and in Dubai. And they just happen to be the same nations that typically supported and had slaves. So there's a direct correlation between slavery, capitalism, and racism, and even sexism to a large degree.
Does anybody want to respond to that? Does anybody want to respond to that?
I just have a question to ask. Why should white supremacy be allowed their constitutional rights when they're the ones that turn around and abuse it against and use it against other people's constitutional rights? And we know they do. But they're the very ones to sit out there and talk their crap. Oh, we abide by the law, but they write that law against other people's rights, and they use the constitutional rights to do it. Mm-hmm. That is supremacy rights.
Can you repeat that again?
I said they used that constitution. I heard a cop this morning on a video. Somebody was trying to use their constitutional rights and talking to him, and he made a comment to his superior, oh, he's trying to use that constitutional crap on me. This is a police officer talking in 2021. 2021, a police officer saying that. So he don't even respect those constitutional rights. If he made that statement, this man's trying to use his constitutional crap on me. You don't even respect it, but you utilize it to protect yourself under the qualified immunity, white boy. And I'm not, when I say white boy, I mean his mindset, not just his skin color, but the mindset of that white man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's almost like when some people are called cracker. A lot of whites take offense to it, but cracker was typically the slave master's person that whipped the slaves. So So you can't even use terms today that identify a white racist, or they call us playing the race card. You can't say a white boy is acting like a racist. You can't say a cracker. You say, hell, oh, no, that's racist to say. Well, your actions have displayed and tell us and inform us that that is what you are. So if we have a rapist, we can't say a person's a rapist, because the rapist will then say you're playing the rapist card. They have lots of logical fallacies to dissuade people from speaking the truth and identifying with nouns what they are. So then we can't say anything. It's like, okay, I guess we can't say anything. We can't walk while black, talk while black, think while black. And if we're harassed, we can't even say it's harassment by a cracker or a white boy, because even that's racist. So we're in limbo.
You know, is it like Marian Jacobs always says, you know, we have to look at people as human beings and not objects, you know, and that's what happened. A lot of people look at people as objects, and we have John with us. John, did you want to say something?
No, I'm just listening.
But what happens is people, they look at others as being objects, and they make judgments. They, you know, whatever, if people respected every individual as a human being and not looked at the pigmentation, because it's not that they color themselves, and it's not that they're born just with a different complexion. It's in the skin. It's in the pigmentation. But we also have to remember, and an Irish woman once came running to me and said, Leona, did you know that all of our DNA came from Africa? This is an Irish lady coming to me, Millie. And I said, yeah, Millie. She said, I didn't know that. But see, this is what happens. It all came. And like you mentioned earlier about Jesus, how they paint picture or portray Jesus as being white. How can anybody from the Middle East or Africa continent, which is where it all started, be of completely white if that's where they came from? So Jesus had to be of color.
Yeah.
He had to be of color.
Yeah. And in fact, this whole racism thing, even some of our blacker friends have it twisted, because they assume that all white people are racist, or that they were racist forever. But they don't realize that when the Greeks were worshiping Imhotep and respecting him, this dark-skinned, light-skinned wasn't an issue. It started when Alexander the Great conquered Kemet, also known today as Egypt, and it also started when the Indus Valley was invaded. Some say it wasn't an invasion, but the Aryans from what we call today Iran, mostly Iran, went in and put a caste system in place. So this is not all of humanity and history was this skin color thing about dark, light, a major issue between us. So for black people even, it's good to know that, hey, some of us may have some erroneous thinking. However, you can understand it when this is all you've seen, and this is all your parents have seen, and your grandparents, and your great-grandparents. It's really up to the lighter-skinned Americans and Europeans to kind of make the changes necessary. However, most of the black leaders, I think, have been ineffective, because if they were more effective, I don't think things would be as bad as they are with the poverty in the hood and with the violence. I don't think it all can be blamed on the white establishment, because we're no longer in physical chains. The chains may be in the brain, but that's what good leaders do. They lead you out of the mental change. So we have two groups, white establishment, but then we have black upper class, bolé types, who get paid as their people are played and oppressed, suppressed, and repressed. And sadly, the masses at the bottom, even average white people, are not benefiting financially in a major way. The caste that is at the bottom and the middle class and the poor folks really got to wake up and smell the coffee and see that everyone's being played to varying degrees. Richard Nixon started the Southern Strategy, and that was to divide Latinos from blacks. He also started that war on drugs, and that was really a racist war that we continue today. And I use the term loosely, because racist is really a misnomer and erroneous, because we're all Homo sapiens. What we are is different tribes and ethnicities, but we're all actually family from Africa. There were just a few migrations. Some skin colors lightened, some eyes made a different shape, but it was all to survive genetically for phenotype. But that has been used to push us against each other. Meanwhile, the planet is being exploited, pollution. Elon Musk is ready to go to Mars and take maybe 20 people with him, and the rest of us will be here swimming in pollution. And you know
that's the truth. You know, this country, it says man's going to destroy man anyway. But with all the pollution, with all the global warming and everything, and they're talking about, legislative members are talking about doing something about the global warming and all this. But yet, like you say, they're spending billions of dollars going up to space for, what, 10 or 11 minutes. And here we have a population in the world, so many people are poor, without food, without clothing. And here these people are out there in shelter. And here these people are out there spending their billions and millions of dollars on trips to the space for 10 or 11 minutes. And I think they pay athletes and celebrities, I think they pay them way too much than they need to. And all these things, the prisons for profit, I think they need to defund the prisons. I think they need to defund the law enforcement. And this is because there's a lot of people think that they're eating well in the prisons when they're not. They're giving them fattening foods, but they're eating garbage. You heard, or I'm sure some of you have heard, even on Facebook, these people talking about serving the maggots and all these things in their food and everything in the prison. Taxpayers are paying money, and a lot of times they'll say, well, we got to pay all this money out to those prisoners. They're not getting it. They're not getting it. You know who's getting it? Just like prisons for profit. Everything now, even for Christmas, if you want to order something for your loved one, you can't unless it's through the system. So a lot of these things, but I'd like to have you on the show sometime to talk more about what you were talking about, because that's very interesting. Arian and all of this, I think it's something that is really interesting. And I have to say, yeah, we have another caller too for a minute. Yeah. I'm going to go back to you, but let's see who this is calling in. Oh, they hung up. Okay, so please finish what you were saying. Oh, where you finished?
Oh, I'm Leona. May I be heard?
Yes. Well, state your first name.
This is John.
Okay, John. Welcome.
Thank you for your call and your heartfelt interest in trying to bring your intelligence to the discussion of these topics. Everybody, each and every one of us, myself included, we only are able to speak from the perspective of our own experience. So therefore, I have voids in understanding and insight, and that's what helps when we have these discussions for each one of us to be challenged in our own thinking, in our own knowledge, and what we think is our own wisdom, to be able to see things clearer and make more well-informed decisions. And I think part of the problem, in my humble opinion, not all of it or even the majority of it, but part of the problem is in the fact that our communications is based on our definitions of things that mean different. And I'm spinning off on the fact that the one lady was mentioning about how the certain people are using the Constitution basically as an excuse to get away with doing their nefarious stuff. Well, in my humble opinion, all of us need to have a conversation about what the defined words mean in the United States Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution. Otherwise, each one of us are making up our own definitions on what all the words mean. So therefore, whose interpretation of those documents are we basing our judgment on? And as long as we continue to be distracted with that, we are going to be destroyed for the lack of knowledge, and we're not actually treating our fellow man, loving them as our neighbor, because none of us like to be burdened or bullied or forced, but then we talk about these issues as if we control it all and we don't like the way other people are doing what they do with their own property. Because see, in the Declaration of Independence, we know that each and every one of us, in the first paragraph, assume among the powers of the earth the separate. Is somebody trying to cut me off?
No, go ahead.
Well, anyway, in the first, I just heard some weird noises, and I thought somebody was trying to get my attention. Sorry about that. But in the very first paragraph of the United States Declaration of Independence, it speaks about, we assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle us. Therefore, we are each, by that statement, if, depending on how you want to interpret it, in my humble opinion, we are each one of us individually
equitable, self-governing, free people. You don't burden me and encumber me or obligate me to anything, and I do not have the privilege of burdening and encumbering and obligating you or anybody else to anything. That's what's freedom, independent, and liberty and justice, and you get to self-determine your pursuit of happiness. Now, the perverted interpretation of what this lady was speaking of allows these particular people to use the Constitution to treat you like a legislative slave. When they get to burden and encumber you with rules, laws, process, procedures, and then they deny you your constitutional right. You know, Article 1, Sections 9 and 10, there's no title of nobility. So that right there is telling us in black and white the constitutional covenant agreement that we as a people agreed to have between each other, that no rank and file, no chain of command when it comes to governing, there's no title of nobility. We all are equitable, self-governing, free people. And then Article 4, Section 2 of the same United States Constitution states citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states, reinforcing there's no chain of command, there's no rank and file, we are all equitable, self-governing, free people. The very First Amendment in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition the government for redress of grievance. So therefore, if they deny you your grievance remedy, you know, whenever you call your congressman or your senator because you say, hey, these bills or these rules, these laws, these regulations are infringing and abridging my pursuit of happiness, and they do not provide you remedy, they've relegated you to a second or third class citizen, and that's called extrinsic fraud. It's called fraudulent conveyance, fraudulent conversion, fraudulent confiscation. It's destruction of private property, because your private property, the self-governing of you, is yours alone. You have exclusive jurisdictional power and authority over all burdens and encumbrances of you as a self-governing free person, including all the rules, laws, processes, and procedures of governing. Well, because the governing of you and the governing of me intersect sometime, they come into contact with each other, we are co-owners in unity of government. These are legal principles. Get your legal dictionary and, you know, get your Constitution and your Declaration of Independence and read up on these things, and it makes more sense. Unfortunately, like the lady said, there are some people, and it's sad to say, in our Congress, 99% of them are crooks, in my opinion. In our judicial system, the Bar Association is owned by the uber elite, snobby, wealthy folks that want to manipulate all of the rules, laws, processes, and procedures for you to not be able to exercise your self-governing of you. They want to manipulate and control it because they think they know it all. But anyway, this is just food for thought that we need to have a serious conversation about the definition of the words and the interpretation of these things. Otherwise, they are going to continue to say they're representing us when they actually are representing you like a pimp represents a prostitute, giving them and their friends a high-speed fast lane to their pursuit of happiness while denying you and the rest of us that same privilege and immunity where we have to jump through all kinds of hoops and hurdles and whatnot to get our freedom and our pursuit of happiness. And these people that are, like you were mentioning, are being held in prison, whether it be the January 6th people or anybody else. And yes, we need to free Julian Assange and Edward Snowden. And thank you, Edward Snowden and Julian Assange and Chelsea Manning for doing the data dumps to help us know these crooks are doing crooked stuff. But we need to have serious conversations about these things to help make sure that they don't get to represent you like a pimp represents a prostitute and continue to dictate.
We have about 60 seconds, but is this John? Is your name John?
Right.
I go by John Doe.
I'm on these shows all the time. I listen a lot more than I talk.
Right, John, I wanted to ask you, can you come on next Tuesday? I would love to have you talk more about this because what you're talking about is so on target. So if you could come on next Tuesday at the same time, because we only have about 15 seconds before it goes off. But I'd love to have you back on. And the others that I haven't gotten around to call, please join us next Tuesday, because we need to talk more about what you're talking about, John. These things are, just like you say, the judicial and even the American Bar Association, we need to talk more about this, because you were right about them. So please come back on. And we are now going to have to...
I will intend to. I don't know what my schedule will allow at this point, but I will make that intention to do so. Thank you for
okay.
the invitation.
And if you can't come on next Tuesday, then even like tomorrow we'll be on. I'm going to be interviewing Marion Jacobs tomorrow, and it'll be from 1 to 2 or 2:30. So if you can come on, if you can't come on next week, come on tomorrow. But I want to hear more of what you have to say. And also, what is your name, the lady? She's still on with us. What is your name again? I'm sorry, the first name?
Rachel.
If you can also come on, I'd love to have you come back on again, because you two have, you really make a lot of sense in what you're saying, and it needs to get out there. And I didn't get a response from 918, the 0762, but if you'd like
That's
to come
me.
On.
That's
oh,
me,
okay.
ma'am.
Okay, who is the 918-2548?
I don't know.
Okay. But if you can come back on, if not tomorrow, definitely next Tuesday, because that's when we have the free-for-all. Anybody can call in and talk about any of these issues.
Oh,
but
I will, because like I said, it starts at this law enforcement, and they, I really got peed off of the video I watched where they take an oath of the Constitution, but then they say piss on it. So, yeah, I got a lot to say about that, because that's where the minorities' problems start in this country, right
yeah.
there with that mindset.
Like he said, too, the judicial system. But we are now going to be signing off. We are out of time, and I hope and pray that you both will come back on again, and we will have the show continuing tomorrow with Marion Jacobs, and then next Tuesday, 12 to 1:30, please join us. Thank you so much for coming on. Okay.